Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, welcome one and all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here, spending another evening with me as we are going to welcome in a new guest, but not quite yet, because we want to thank our sponsors and also a way for you to contact me. And you can do that through email is usually the best. That's FSHD Society website, of course, but the FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org is the email. Always find news, notes, events, upcoming things. I know there's big event coming up in June, so you can learn more about that at FSHDSociety.org. At the end of the show, I'll briefly talk about that, as well as thank you to our sponsors, Perkin Elmer, Dyne Therapeutics, and Fulcrum Therapeutics, as we are so glad they're on board because it does help kind of, well, it helps get the word out about the show. It helps us promote it, market it, etc. With their support, it's always needed, and it is a huge help. So we thank them. Today, we're going to concentrate our conversation on the CTRN. We have a guest that you can see is waiting in the wings to kind of bring her information about that particular thing. And we've talked about this before. We've talked about the CTRN, but we welcome her in now. Welcome, Michelle Walker. How are you doing? Hopefully better than
So I'm Michaela Walker. I'm a research project manager for the FSHD Clinical Trial Research Network. And I've actually been working in the Clinical Research Network for about 4 years now.
Wow. That's a long time. How long has the CTRN been around?
It has been around for about 6 years now.
So you've pretty much been there for the lion's share of it. That's awesome. What did you do prior to working there?
So I worked in direct patient care for about 9 years now. Previously, before I moved into the muscular dystrophy world, I actually worked in Alzheimer's and dementia. So I've been in neurology for about 9 years.
Is there something that drew you, you know, even earlier on into neurology, into that world?
Yes. So I actually have some personal family experiences with neurological disorders, not muscular dystrophy. In general, but several other diseases. And so that really drew me in from like a young age, probably about 10 to 12 years old. I always knew that I wanted to work in medicine, and I always knew that I was interested in neurology specifically.
I think, yeah, that people can relate to, especially the Alzheimer's side. I had a grandmother with it. My wife's grandmother had it. Both passed away, I guess you could say, complications of it. And neurological disease, yeah, I think affects more people than maybe we even realize. I know I, for one, when I went to see a neurologist for muscular dystrophy, I was like, I almost didn't, it's just, for some reason in my mind, it didn't make a lot of sense. I'm like, wait, I'm seeing a neurologist for a muscle problem. So it's kind of fascinating how it all kind of ties in. What is your direct role or that you are responsible for with the CTRN?
As a research project manager, I'm in charge of basically everything we do on the CTRN level. So like our patient engagement groups, our advocacy board, things of that nature. But then on another role that I have is I'm the project manager for the MOVE FSHD study. So that's really my big project in the CTRN, but then I help with the regular day-to-day tasks of the things that we do as well.
How important right now are you seeing that MOVE study being?
I think that the MOVE study is going to be really, really essential for these pharmaceutical companies to be ready to come into the space. Of course, we have the Resolve FSHD study, which was really essential to getting like Fulcrum Therapeutics into their first trial. But I think that the MOVE study is just going to really have an even bigger impact because we're asking different types types of questions, and we're looking even further into the types of outcomes that we're interested in for research studies. So really, we just had an opportunity to go even bigger with this study and learn even more about these potential measures. I think RESOLVE in the current clinical trials had us asking more questions, different questions. And so now we want to find out those answers.
Can you give some of the examples of the differences in the questions from one to the other?
So MRI has become a really, really big component in the space, and we were not able to do MRI in the RESOLVE study initially. So with the MOVE study, we have added a MRI and muscle biopsy sub-study. So I think that's going to be really essential to helping companies prepare and come into the field so that they know the types of measurements they're wanting to do and what exactly they're looking at. The other really big difference about MOVE that I think is phenomenal is that it's truly meant for all FSHD patients. It includes type 1, type 2, it includes children, those who might be in a wheelchair that might not be able to participate in other clinical trials. So it was really meant to encompass the full FSHD community and be representative of the disease as a whole versus that specific person that we would be looking for a clinical trial.
That's fascinating. You touched on a couple things there. I like the all-inclusive, type 1, type 2. Some don't even know there's two different types. But also we've been like keying in on early onset as well. So you mentioned children having it. And that this kind of includes them as well. Can you touch on that a little bit more if you can, as in maybe like what's required, or maybe if there isn't more of a need to have families or children volunteer or be a part of this somehow?
Yeah, there definitely is a great need. And that's why we decided to do these studies, because we realized that we weren't capturing the full picture of FSHD. And so in order to bring therapies to children, or to those other individuals, we needed to better understand outcome measures and things that are important to them. We do have several kiddos in our study right now for MOVE, and obviously we're continuing to enroll more, but it's really important for these kids because they really haven't been looked at or measured, and looking at outcomes and measurements in children is very different than it is in adults. And that's something we really haven't explored yet in the field. So that's something we are hoping to do with this study. And we are hoping we can potentially expand the pediatric cohort to a larger group of kids.
Mm. What's been the response from the parents of these children that they're kind of being included within this time?
I think we've gotten a really good response so far. I think it's finally bringing a little bit of hope to these parents and to these children. I think that they're really, really excited to actually finally have a chance to participate in something.
Yeah. I got the sense very much so that they feel they've been left out of the group or left out of the treatments or the studies or, you know, a lot of the things, to be honest. And I was a little guilty of it in my little sliver corner of this, because I didn't even have anybody on this podcast talking about early onset until recently. And, I thought to myself, why are we ignoring that part? Because that is huge. And if anything, I find it's even more important to help the kids, because they get affected by this, it seems, a lot more, and, you know, sooner and quicker. It's more, I guess, extreme, maybe, the symptoms. Have you kind of come to find that with your interaction?
So it's still been very limited, but yes, typically those with early onset are going to have symptoms and are going to have a more difficult time than someone who might have onset in their 50s or 60s, which is why we want to look into this, because they might be more affected than the typical FSHD patient with adult onset. So yes, that's very likely true.
And what are you hoping to accomplish within the MOVE study, in either in comparison to the RESOLVE one or just in general? I mean, I know it's treatments, I know it's more information, but is there like a holy grail kind of piece that you're all seeking to find?
Really, with our studies, we want to look at everything. We kind of decided we needed to take a step back and look at the overall big picture. So I hate to say it, but we really are looking at every single thing. We want to look at the neuroimaging, the MRI. We want to look at blood samples, saliva, spit samples. We want to look at the different motor performance, like how people move, how people function, what their strength is, their range of motion. So the answer is we haven't picked one outcome that we're really centering on because we don't know if we've identified the best outcomes. So that's why we're really kind of doing everything in these studies so that we can then decide what the best ones are.
What's the most fascinating thing that you might have seen? For me, it's that how it affects people so differently. Somebody can have it onset in their 40s and it's all of a sudden drastically takes control of their life and it's totally drastic in what's happening. And others, it's not as much. Some affects their face, other affects more of their shoulders. It seems to be all over the map from my viewpoint. So I'm curious to know from your scientific side of it, you know, to answer that question in that way, like, what do you find is the most interesting things or the most, you know, the complication of it? It's even hard for me to ask you a question based on it because it's so all over the place.
It is. It's definitely all over the place. I think one of the most interesting and fascinating things that we don't understand, and we are looking at a few things, is the difference between family members. Like they will have the exact same genetic mutation, but they present differently. Like one might be much less affected than another family member who might be in a power wheelchair, but they have the exact same genetic mutation. So what are we missing that one person is more affected than the other, even though they have the exact same genetic problem? So we don't have the answer. We have a guess, which is what we're looking into. But we don't have the answer yet, but I find that probably to be one of the craziest and most fascinating things. Because it's what are we missing? Because genetically, they look the same.
So. Do you ever find it interesting and frustrating?
I'm sure you guys find this extremely frustrating. But yes, as a researcher, it's really frustrating when you feel like you're getting closer to the answer, but then you just came up with 10 more questions and more things that you don't understand because you feel like you're taking steps forward, but you're not getting as far as you thought you were. So it is really frustrating. But I think that we're finally coming to the point of the tip of the iceberg. So where we're really understanding what is going on with FSHD as far as at the disease level. And then once you understand the disease, it makes it a lot easier to then understand the cure or the way forward. So I do think we've come really far in the last 5 years. And I think it's a really exciting time for the community because we understand so much more now than, you know, we did a few years ago. But it has brought more questions.
I'd imagine you turn over one part of this and then it opens up more questions, maybe give some answers too, but then it also always leads to more questions. And then you keep going down these rabbit holes, I can imagine. So for me, yeah, I can only guess it's probably frustrating, but at the same time liberating if you can get some questions answered, but then it also leads to more questions. I can only imagine what you guys are going through, pulling all that data and all those questions popping up and it must be fascinating. For me and my level of brain, I don't think I could handle all of that, to be honest with you. I just understand the very, you know, surface of what's happening to us. I leave it to the very intelligent, smart people like yourselves to kind of dig deeper. And that's, I think, where the appreciation of this comes from. It also becomes difficult for a layperson like myself to dig deep into, like, okay, what do we ask this person that, you know, can give us the best information that we can gather from it? You mentioned family and seeing how it affects them different, even though it's the same mutation. How about coming across the people that have had the spontaneous mutation? There is no family line. They're like the first.
What do you mean about them? Like, how are they different than people who have family members?
Have you noticed anything different between a spontaneous and someone that's maybe had it, you know, passed on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I would like to say, I think a lot of our patients for the most part have other family members who have this disease. Yeah. So a lot of the patients that I see, there's not a lot of spontaneous. I hate to say that question might be just a tad over my head. But
well, you just
mostly,
haven't seen it.
Yeah, mostly people have some sort of affected family member. But it does make you wonder, how does that spontaneous mutation happen?
Yeah. Yeah, because as far as I know, like even in my history, and I don't know a lot of my history because I'm adopted, so I don't have a big family line to kind of go off of. So keep that in mind. But the little I do know, it's a possibility that I am one of those spontaneous ones. So yeah, it is fascinating. It is fascinating. The whole thing, I find it fascinating, but I always find it irritating because it just has to be this difficult. When you're in the midst of the research, how is the, you know, because to me, I ask people that have the disease in some of these episodes, you know, affects you physically more, does it affect you emotionally more? And so from a scientist aspect, a researcher aspect, how does it affect you emotionally, you know, beyond the research, you know, knowing full well that you're involved with the people that have it?
It definitely tugs on your heartstrings, and I think it just motivates you to work harder and smarter. I've developed a lot of really close relationships with my patients over the years. So I just try to be someone that listens to them and tries to understand what they're going through, and then also advocate for them as much as possible, not even just in a research realm, but in the clinic. Like, how can we make it so that they can achieve their goals? You know, is there something in particular that they're wanting to do that they feel like they can't do? And how can we help them through that? I think it's just about thinking outside the box and thinking about how to overcome barriers and doing it together.
Yeah, it's gotta be difficult because, you know, there's a face to it. You know, sometimes maybe in certain aspects of research, people don't have the opportunity to meet those that have it. You know, they're in within the data, which is nothing wrong with that, you know, of course. And that's part of the job, I'd imagine, as well. But if you are getting attached to people with it, meeting them, I can imagine that also has a heavier weight to bear. Almost a sense of urgency. I would imagine you get that kind of sense too, like we have to hurry and figure this out.
Yeah, well, and you guys have been waiting for a really long time. So there's that sense as well. But no, I mean, when you have an emotional attachment and a physical connection to hundreds of people with this disease, it definitely motivates you to, like I said, work harder and work smarter. How can we make, how can we propel the field forward, like truly propel it forward exponentially? Because the last 20 years, it's been moving, but I feel like it's finally catching some actual speed behind it. But I think that having a personal relationship with these patients just really, it motivates you. And that's what motivates me to come into work every day, is to try to help change these people's lives.
Yeah, it's a great job to have, a job with some meaning and can make a big impact, you know. Very, very rewarding, I can imagine. I think most of us quest for that. So it's awesome that you have something that in front of you that you're working on. Within that regard, you're talking about being connected to people within the community. What kind of work have you done, or volunteer work or community involvement within the FSHD Society?
So within the society, actually, Kylie is the FSHD Society chapter leader for the Kansas City area. So I work with her at the FSHD CTRN. But then as far as the community, so usually KU, we always do a walk and roll team. We always like to try to support our friends out there, but also things that we do, like through KU, at least we do FSHD patient days every other year. So we try to get everyone in the FSHD community together. Previously, pre-pandemic, they used to be in person, which was quite fun because we would all get together and, you know, have lunch and have these big, you know, this big talk. But then with COVID, it actually kind of expanded our circle a little bit because it went virtual. And then we had FSHD people from everywhere. So, I mean, that's kind of how we interact with the community, like just a little bit of a touch of it.
That sounds kind of fun. So you'd have people come and visit. You said spend the day. So with virtual, what does that look like now, the FSHD patient days?
So we did one in 2020, and basically it was, instead of like a big long full day, it was only, you know, like 3-4 hours, because nobody wants to spend 8 hours on Zoom. And then we just tried to go over all the things that we thought would be important to patients, you know, a little bit of an overview of what FSHD is, a little bit about the genetic component. We try to go over like what's currently going on in the field, what's coming down the pipeline, like what exciting things are new, things like that. We're hoping that we're going to have one in person for 2022. So cross your fingers and toes.
Nice.
So yes, we try to do them every couple of years.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that you guys go that next step. You know, I'm very, very, very much involved. And I know I'm part of that walk and roll event too, on the virtual side of things. And I kind of chuckled when you said no one wants to be on Zoom for like 8 hours. I think I've done those telethons or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of, I mean, I want to, but I don't want to, you know, it's hard. Yeah. Yes. So but I get it. Yeah. 3 hours is enough. That's good. Can you compress all that into the 3 hours and get the information and get the outreach and the connection with the people in that short amount of time? So I give you guys a lot of credit for going virtual. So did you, then you said it kind of broadened the footprint or the reach. Would you think that's kind of a good thing in a way, and all of the difficulties of trying to, you know, adjust to a virtual event?
Oh, definitely. I honestly think that the pandemic, while it's been horrible in a lot of ways, it's also really, I think, helped further things, because this remote technology, I mean, now everyone's using it. And I mean, now we're even trying to use it potentially in research. Wouldn't it be so much easier to do research from your home instead of driving to come see me? you know, things like that. So in a ways it's been a little annoying and hard, but I think it's really just, I think it's made things better and it's made the outreach better. I mean, we had people from all over the US on our virtual meeting, even Canada and the UK. So, I mean, I think that is better. And I think the more people we can reach and educate and help build a bigger community, the better. Because it's nice to know that you're not the only fish in the pond. I think that this is a very isolating disease, because other than maybe your family members, you guys are probably the only person you know with this.
That's the truth. Yes. Yes.
So I think that was the biggest reason why we wanted to have these, is so that other people could meet other people with FSHD.
That's awesome. How about, you mentioned Canada there, you know, the FSHD Canada Foundation, how they awarded the like 2.8 million to CTRN. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we are very thankful to all of our sponsors, of course. And yes, recently FSHD Canada has been able to support the MOVE study. And we are actually hoping to have some Canadian sites come on board in the next few months as well. So I can't tell you their names yet, but they are in the works. So the FSHD CTRN, and we are always looking to expand and make new international friends. So we are hoping to have some Canadian sites come on board and have our Canadian participants finally get to participate in their own country rather than coming and seeing us in the US.
So that is awesome. It'd be nice to have our Northern friends, right?
Yeah.
Involved up there. It's awesome. Yeah. Well, maybe they're just waiting for things to thaw before they get a little, it's probably really cold up there right now.
Yeah, I mean, probably just a little chilly.
Yeah, just a little bit. So you love the idea then of Canada growing the CTRN, helping, funding, sponsoring. How about either you want to mention any other sponsors or, and also maybe any expansion beyond even North America?
So our sponsors for the MOVE FSHD study and MOVE Plus sub-study right now, the FSHD Society, of course, Friends of FSH Research, FSHD Canada, and then Avidity Biosciences. So those are our sponsors for the MOVE study right now. Of course, we're always looking for other collaborators on the study. We are always looking to expand, but right now Canada is the planned expansion, but I mean, we're always looking to expand sites in the UK, Europe, you know, other communities as well. Really, it's just about bringing the communities together and trying to propel things forward for you guys as FSHD patients. How can we improve the care that we provide to you, and how can we get therapies into the clinic?
in the 4 years you've been there, you've mentioned, you know, this has been going on for six, you've been there for four, that's a long time. And from the early start when you were there to now, what are some of maybe the big things of growth that you've seen?
Well, we have an FSHD drug study. So that was a really big one. We finally got that down the pipeline. I mean, even just in the last 4 years, I mean, so much has, like, we've already learned so much about genetics, about further things that we can look into for genetics and different type of testing that we should be looking into that we hadn't thought of before. The different, even like the MRI imaging, that's come a really long way. We're hoping that we can actually see FSHD disease progression in the MRI. So that's what we're looking into. And then just trying to find these different functional tasks that show us how someone might change over time and how it might be predictive. Another thing that we're looking at in MOVE, we call it the risk factors or the predictive factors for FSHD. So what might show that someone might be going into a wheelchair in 10 years? Is there something predictive that we can look at? Or, you know, if someone were need an orthotic or a walking stick, things like that. So we're trying to find out what the potential risk factors or indications are that something like that would happen down the road.
Wow, that'd be crazy. I mean, to think that you could help predict a little bit of what that progression
would look like.
Yeah, would like look like, so we could prepare people for this is what's to come. Because I was told, you know, well, there's no cure, there's no treatment. This is life shortening, not life threatening. I didn't even know the difference. And then something to do with where, you know, maybe you'll be in a chair in 10 years, maybe you won't, we don't know. I'm like, you know, it was all very vague. Like, no one wanted to, you know, kind of get behind any type of path of this disease or whatnot. So to have any type of even idea would be good. Do you think though, that there could be a negative response from someone if you said, well, there's an XYZ chance of, or percentage that, you know, you might need this orthotic or more escalated to, you know, some type of power chair in XYZ amount of years?
Oh, of course. And I mean, that's something that we've been dealing with, like not just with FSHD, but like other diseases. It's all about also, you ask the patient what they want to know, if that makes sense. So yes, if they are not ready to look 20 years down the road, you don't need to go that far. So it's really just about how we can help you with where you're at and what you're looking for. So, I mean, we don't want to scare anyone, but if you're trying to plan for your future and you're asking questions and you want to know the answers, we will tell you if we can.
If you can, right. That's always that way. Yes, if you can. You mentioned that there were other diseases there that you've kind of worked with or through, and I know we talked about the connection with Alzheimer's, and I know that you're also doing a little bit of work with the limb girdle MD, right?
Yeah. So I work on a lot of different muscular dystrophy studies. So not just FSHD. And actually Dr. Statland, we're forming lots of different muscular dystrophy research networks. So another research network that I work on is for limb girdle muscular dystrophy, which some of you probably have limb girdle friends. So we have two studies running on the GRASP LGMD research network, and it encompasses about 10 types of limb girdle. And if you don't know anything about limb girdle, there's over 36 types. There's more types than there are letters in the alphabet. So I'm not only just trying to help the FSHD community, which is very near and dear to my heart, but really the muscular dystrophy community as a whole. Because while you're very different, there's a lot of similarities between what needs to happen for all of you guys.
That kind of leads me to, I just wonder, does like then one study help another in some degree and vice versa?
Oh yeah, of course. We learn a lot, even from our failures in studies, we learn a lot from them. We do learn a lot off of each other. I think a great example is Duchenne muscular dystrophy research, right? I mean, Duchenne really has been what has propelled muscular dystrophy research as a whole forward. And everything that they're doing in Duchenne has kind of trickled down now into these other muscular dystrophies. I definitely think that we learn from each other. the neuromuscular community in general is an extremely small world. A lot of these doctors, a lot of these institutions, they're all working together across lots of networks, different studies, different disease groups. So really, I mean, we're all, it's really one big community, just a muscular dystrophy community working together.
Wow. I suppose. I mean, I get the, you know, the outreach or the connection with the MDA a little bit, but obviously, like you mentioned, near and dear to my heart is the FSHD Society. But yeah, I think we have to help each other, right? And when the research is happening, if it's all muscular dystrophy, maybe that helps kind of check other boxes or helps the research push along for other things. I love how you mentioned also how some of the failures teach you more. I mean, I teach that to my ball players and kids I coach all the time. And sometimes losing is what teaches us more than winning, for sure. What's like some of the, is there anything that you can, I'm kind of going to put you on the spot. Is there anything that you can pull from one of those moments that, okay, that was a failure, it didn't work, but you learned from it? Almost like a fail forward moment.
Yeah, this is kind of putting me on the spot. I'm not sure if I can think of one in this disease group, but one that everyone knows, right, is Viagra. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a heart medication and it didn't work for that, but
it worked for something else. Yeah.
Yes. So that's what I mean by our failures. So just because it didn't work for one thing doesn't mean it can't work for something else. Right. And the same goes for like drug studies that we're trying to do now. We're trying to do what we call repurposing drugs. So drugs that are already out there on the market, that are already FDA approved, but could it work for something else that somebody didn't think of before?
Hmm. That would be nice. I mean, that's going to take a lot of the red tape out of it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And it takes a lot less time and it's a lot cheaper because you're not making a drug from scratch. You're taking something that's already out there.
Yeah. And then repurposing it. I like that. Mm-hmm. How about last question? And I like to end in this kind of, you know, forecasting future. What do you see? What do you hope for this? And I know people listening are going to be like, oh, come on, Michaela, you got to give us a timetable. You know, tell us when this is over. I'm not going to do that to you because I know that's not possible. But in your own words, the best you can describe it, what do you see in the future for this?
I think the FSHD community is going to be extremely surprised and excited. I think that there are finally companies that are ready to step into the space. And I would not be surprised if we have several clinical trials for people to participate in drug trials in the next 2 years.
The next 2 years.
I wouldn't be surprised if we potentially have one in the next year, but definitely 2 years.
And for those that are excited when you say that and they want to get involved, you know, what's going to be that path if they need to, like, okay, how do I help push that along?
So what I tell patients is I encourage you guys to go and see your neurologists. I know that they can't always do anything for you or things like that. The good part is that then you are being consistently seen in clinic. Your doctor kind of knows where you are at in terms of strength and function and things like that. So it makes it easier for them to tell if you're going to qualify for a trial and what trial would be the best fit for you. Because if there's multiple trials, you want to pick the one that's best for you. So that's why I encourage everyone to continue seeing their neurologist and getting involved with the community, just so you can stay in the know and so that your neurologist has tabs on you on where you're at in your disease.
I felt like you were telling that to me directly. Because I am definitely guilty of not going to my neurologist. In fact, I already pushed the appointment. Yes, people, shame on me. Do not do what I do. I was like, man, I don't know. I don't really have time to go this month. I'll push it off till next. And then I remember telling him, well, unless you got a cure in your desk drawer or something, you know, how often do I got to come here? That's exactly what I told him. And he tried to tell me, we need to know where the progression is and this and that. So I got scolded. Now you're doing it. I hear you. So anybody else that's in my shoes, you saw Michaela sticking the pointing the finger like that and saying, get to it. That's not just for me. It's for all of us that are doing what I'm doing. Get involved, get more involved, visit your doctor, do that work, do that simple work that we can do. Lastly, then, how can people maybe get the ground floor info of what you guys are doing? How can they find more information? Where would you lead them? Or if they even wanted to contact you, if that's possible.
Oh, well, definitely possible. I will say the FSHD Society does a great job of keeping the community in the know. So you guys, they do an awesome job about letting them know where the sites are, how to get in touch with people. The FSHD CTRN, we do have a website on there as well. And then really all research in general is always going to be on clinicaltrials.gov. So that will have all of the research in the United States and most of the research going on outside of the US. And then they always list the sites that are participating, and we have contact information on there as well.
Perfect. All right. So no excuses now. Well, thank you very much, Michaela Walker, for joining us today, telling us all the things that are going on, spending the time, maybe for some people, kind of taking some of the confusion out of it too. You know, I think people hear CTRN, what does that do? And this and that. And do I have to get involved? I think you answered a lot of questions and sent people in the right direction with some good energy and some good hope. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, and have a great evening.
You as well. Awesome. That is Michaela Walker. She is one of the main staples there in the CTRN. You want to learn more, like she said, clinicaltrials.gov. Don't be intimidated by the .gov. I'm sure it's easy enough to find your way through, to find where you can get involved. There are people that want to. And if you're one of those people, that's a good start. Why don't we take a break? On the flip side, we'll come back and talk about a couple more things in the FSHD Society and go from there. Listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. FSHD Radio is sponsored by Dyne Therapeutics, a muscle disease company focused on advancing innovative, life-transforming therapeutics for people living with genetically driven diseases. Dyne is developing a broad portfolio of therapies for muscle diseases, including programs in facioscapulohumeral muscular dystrophy, myotonic dystrophy type 1, and Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Utilizing its proprietary FORCE platform, Dyne is developing modern oligonucleotide therapeutic candidates designed to overcome limitations in delivery to muscle. For more information, please visit dyne-tx.com and follow Dyne on LinkedIn and Twitter. Now, welcome back to the show, FSHD Society Radio. Thanks for being here. Special thank you to Michaela Walker for joining us. We talked a little bit about the FSHD Canada Foundation and how they awarded the $2.8 million to the CTRN, one of the sponsors. It's awesome. And Michaela also mentioned other sponsors. I suggest you visit those and follow them and support them. And also, you can find information on that article. It was posted on February 4th of this year. And you can leave comments and interact with that blog. So please do that. That's all on the fshdsociety.org site. Kind of looking at the news a little bit, because I really wanted to focus in, not the news, maybe it's more the calendar. The news is always, to me, get involved as you feel comfortable. I think Michaela scolded me for not going to my doctor. I should go more often. So if you're one of the people like me that's guilty of doing that, please, I guess we all have to do our part and get in with the research and get ourselves more or less monitored, right? I also wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of those things coming up in June. I know it's going to be a busy month. Also, if people are out and about kind of making up for being locked in during COVID and then the resurge of COVID in the summer months, you're going to be out doing things. Don't lose track of what's going on in June in the FSHD Society. June 16th and 17th, 29th Annual Society International Research Congress. Ooh, almost lost my breath there trying to spit that one out, but it is available there for you. Register now, fshdsociety.org, find that information. I'm not done. There's something else going on, of course, in June, and that is the FSHD Connect 2022. Light the fire within to light the world with your fire. That's right. The FSHD Connect is the FSHD Society's flagship educational conference held every 2 years. It's the world's biggest networking event for FSHD, bringing together hundreds of individuals and families living with FSH muscular dystrophy, clinicians and researchers for 2 days of immersive learning and workshops. And I'm excited to say that I believe that stretch of that area in June, 18th, 19th, and then, of course, we know the 20th of June is World FSHD Day, and we're going to be doing some broadcasting, and I'm not sure all the details, but I think I'm going to get involved, and I'm excited to, and there's nothing like going to Florida in June, and I'm going. So if you want to go, you're thinking about it, now is your turning point, you want to meet me, I'd love to meet you. So if that's incentive, God love you, because I'll be there, right? That is the goal. So that's some of the news and things I wanted to kind of talk about on that end. I also have to squeeze in, though, another little ad, though, for our sponsors. So hang tight. We're going to hear from Fulcrum here. When we come back, we'll close up shop. You're listening to FSHD Society Radio Show. Today's FSHD Society Radio Show is sponsored by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum is a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, advancing new medicines that target the root cause of genetically defined rare diseases such as FSHD and sickle cell disease. Fulcrum's approach to drug discovery combines insights from patients with rare diseases with the most advanced tools to identify and develop therapeutics that will target the root cause. For several years, Fulcrum has been honored to work with the FSHD community in efforts to build awareness of the impact of FSHD on individuals and families. Fulcrum works in partnership with leaders from the patient advocacy and medical communities to highlight the impact of rare diseases and support continued research. You can connect with Fulcrum on LinkedIn and follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FulcrumTX. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for listening to the sponsor ads. Yep, that's Dyne Therapeutics and Fulcrum Therapeutics as part of our sponsors of the show. We always are grateful for their contributions. We'll close up the show with one from Perkin Elmer, but our third sponsor. And, you know, it is just amazing that we have such a great group of people working so hard, particularly who we had on today. Michaela Walker working with the CTRN, very important, very, very exciting things coming from there. So learn more, get involved with it any way you can. I love the fact that the MOVE study is involved, early onset, young people that cannot be forgotten. They are getting impacted by this disease terribly. And we need to, you know, stand our ground and do everything we can to protect our kids. And let's just stop this from happening generational. As Michaela mentioned, you know, interesting factors of how does it affect someone else in the same family line, same genetic mutation issue, DNA issue, and it affects them differently. So the research sounds daunting, difficult, maybe sometimes exciting to get answers, but there's still work to be done. So anything we can do, let's do that. So special thank you to her for joining us. Thank you, Michaela, again. Thank you for listening. If you've missed any of the episodes in the past, you can find them everywhere you find podcasts. We get them out there and released pretty much the day we release it here live. It is available for you on Spotify. I think maybe iTunes. They're kind of touchy with what they allow on. But for the most part, anywhere you find podcasts that you listen to them, you'll find us. Get the word out. This is a great way to educate people. I always try to use the story of a gentleman that I worked with a little ways back. Kind of came up to me. We were talking about podcasts. Said, oh, I have a podcast. And I told him what it was about. And it's not really mine. I said it's for the FSHD Society. I had that moment to educate him on what that was and what I deal with and so many of us deal with. And surprisingly, a couple days later, he came back and said, I listened to a bunch of episodes, man. I'm hooked. Really educational stuff, amazing guests. He pointed out a couple guests that he really enjoyed. Others he really was excited to get to yet because he didn't get a chance to listen to those episodes. It was awesome. It was awesome that somebody that wasn't even directly involved took that extra moment to listen. So use this vessel, use this tool here to give this to people to listen to learn more about our group, our society, and what they can do. And then, of course, we hope then raise money or get awareness or participate in our walk and roll events or anything they can do. That is really what I hope for this platform is that it is just a connecting rod to, you know, spread it to others. So thank you for making the connection with me today. If you want to make a further connection beyond this show, you can do that. I am here. Please do so. FSHD Radio at fshdsociety.org. I had a listener reach out in between this episode and the last and talking about her son. Thank you for reaching out to me. It was very touching. We made a great connection there, and that goes for everybody else listening. If there's anything you need, even just someone to listen, I'm here. I just don't talk. I listen to. So thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next time on the FSHD Society Radio Show. Take care. Today's podcast is sponsored by PerkinElmer Genomics, a market leader in biochemical and genomic testing solutions. PerkinElmer Genomics understands that obtaining a confirmed genetic diagnosis for FSHD can be difficult and frustrating experience for both patients and their families. That's why their laboratory prides itself on launching new and innovative technologies to help families find answers that they are looking for. Just over a year ago, PerkinElmer Genomics introduced the first new diagnostic approach to FSHD type 1 genetic testing in nearly three decades. This testing has drastically decreased the time to diagnose while increasing accessibility to patients. Knowing the underlying cause of FSHD can have important implications for the entire family, including help with future medical management decisions. Speak with your provider today and learn more about how you can get testing. Visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com to find out more about available testing options for FSHD and other related neuromuscular disorders that may help you and your family today. That's PerkinElmerGenomics.com.